Hello out there and welcome to episode 58 of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. My name is Rob Schenck.
And I'm Will Smith.
We are your co-hosts for this episode, and we are also Georgia trial lawyers practicing in the areas of nursing home abuse and neglect. As this episode goes to air, it is March 5th of 2018. We are getting close. Actually, I think it's about less than a week away to daylight saving times. Daylight saving time. I think there is an S though. I think it is daylight savings time.
It doesn't feel right if you say daylight saving time.
Yeah. Like it's savings, like it's, you know.
Yeah.
Sunday, come down to the mattress warehouse for savings.
Right.
But are you on board with that group of people that say we should do away with daylight savings altogether?
Yes.
Okay, why is that?
Well, I think the original purpose of it was to provide more daylight to farmers, but because of the industrialization of American farmland, it's really not a necessary phenomenon anymore. It's not a necessary thing.
But from a standpoint of like just enjoyment of life, don't you want to be awake with there being more daylight? Like, don't you want to rise with the sun and things like that?
Oh, no. Unless I have an incident like I did a couple of episodes ago where I got here late, I typically get up before the sun rises anyway. It doesn't matter to me, you know.
And actually, I think there's this Arizona. Arizona doesn't recognize daylight saving time, if I remember correctly.
I didn't like it as a child because I felt that man was intruding upon.
You didn't.
I did. This is true. You can ask my mother. I didn't know what right man had to alter time like that. And people were so flippant about it. It didn't make any sense to me because they were just like, no, son, we're going to set the clocks forward.
That's pretty profound for a kid that would then put on Toppy boots and his ninja hat.
Toppy boots
and go out and reenact Gymkata. Scenes from the movie Gymkata. Anyway, this is a special episode. Once again, back again, is one heck of a trial lawyer. Who is it, Will?
Mark Kozorotsky. Graduated law school 1979 from Drake University. He is a partner at Kozorotsky Smith Law Firm. He's board certified civil trial advocate by the National Board of Trial Advocacy and the Minnesota State Bar Association. He's recognized as best lawyers in America, in addition to, as we pointed out last time, having recently received his 21st Super Lawyer Award.
That's amazing.
He's listed as one of the best lawyers in America, the best law firms in America, the Million Dollar Advocates Forum. In a nutshell, in his 38 years of practice, this guy has just built an amazing personal injury practice and devotes a lot of it now to nursing home neglect and abuse, and has even written books for many of the younger lawyers on how to pursue these cases.
That's right. So we are very privileged to have
very privileged to have
Mark on the show.
Thank you.
So Mark, how long does it usually take on average for you in your experience from when you're the family members of a loved one who has perished in a nursing home comes into your office to say the time that you have completed your investigation before either filing suit or sending a demand? I don't even know if you send demands or not, but what is the timeline for that usually?
Well, that depends on the complexity of the case and how much trouble we have getting medical records. But on the short lease, 4 or 5 months, sometimes it can take as long as a year. It really depends on the complexity of the case. And so on a short time, a case could get done in 4 or 5 months. But the average case takes more than a year to get through the system.
Wow. And then once the case has been filed, I know you do cases outside of Minnesota, but what's the average length of time that a loved one of somebody who's been injured or killed in a nursing home would need to wait for, I guess, ultimate verdict?
Well, that's driven by the court system. And most courts set a trial out 9 months to a year.
Yeah. And are you seeing a lot of, in Minnesota at least, Mark, are you seeing a lot of these cases go to verdict, or do the nursing homes eventually just settle?
The vast majority of them get resolved. Right. But they don't get resolved until you've shown them that you know what you're doing, and you show them what you have is evidence. Because I'm a strong believer that you have to have evidence to prove your case. It's not just smoke and mirrors. But once you put those cards on the table, smart defense lawyers are going to say, this is not something I want to roll the dice on.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Because I think, what do we have here in Georgia?
But until you do that, they don't want to talk to you.
Yeah, right. Because I was going to say, Will, what do we have here in Georgia? Like less than a half a dozen verdicts in Georgia for nursing homes? Like,
maybe 8 or 9 verdicts in the past 20
like
20
years, something like that. Yeah, they're usually settling.
Yeah, well, you're starting to see more and more of them because some of these defense lawyers are trying to convince the nursing homes for their own reasons that it's important to fight these to the death.
Right.
And it's really unfortunate because sometimes, you know, they'll spend $250,000, $300,000 defending it. I had one case that we learned after we tried it for 5 days and settled it, that the defense had thrown $800,000 at trying to stop this train from getting to the station.
Well, I mean, that makes sense because it seems to me that you're unique, not necessarily unique, but you're probably not average attorney going after these nursing homes if you're going after them with a systematic approach. I have to imagine that not every attorney has a financial accountant or forensic accountant and is trying to unravel all the layers. They're usually maybe just going after the initial mechanism of injury and trying to get compensated for that. So you're probably in a less common boat.
Yeah.
Well, you're absolutely correct on it. I mean, I had a case down in Macon, Georgia, some years ago, and you know, we spent the better part of the year unraveling this cell game. And at the beginning, they just told us this case was nonsense, and there, you know, it was a small ma-and-pa shop, and we wouldn't get any money for the family. And I told them, look, this family is not about the money. This family is about putting a fine on you folks so you don't kill anybody else. Mm-hmm. And by the time we had unraveled it, we found that this was, you know, a company worth hundreds of millions of dollars that was running nonprofits and for-profits and running them intertwined like a spider web.
Wow. Mark, we've gone from investigation all the way through to verdict, talking about settlements, things like that. What is your experience with those individuals who have signed arbitration agreements that force alternative to the litigation process, having to go through an arbitrator, having to go through the arbitration process? Do you have an opinion on that?
Well, my opinion is the industry pulled the wool over the court's eyes on this. They keep saying that it's cheaper to do an arbitration and more efficient, but most of the time you find it's way more expensive because, let's say they have a 3-judge arbitration panel and each one is $500 an hour. And if you split it between the two sides at $750 an hour for every little fight that there is. And then you have the trial itself, which was, you know, they make it sound like it's a 1-day process, but the arbitrations I've tried have taken a week to 2 weeks. And so you get $100,000 of arbitration costs, where otherwise, if it would have been a jury trial, you'd have your filing fee. So that's just absurd. Unfortunately, courts throughout the country, you know, have bought into this, and a lot of arbitration agreements are being approved by the court and enforced, and they've been enforced by the Supreme Court. But there are situations where we don't whether the arbitration agreement isn't valid or it's so overburdensome that it just isn't fair and the courts will strike it. I've tried a number of arbitrations. I've gotten some good results on them. They haven't been home runs, but the problem is they've been serious, though, but the cost is phenomenal.
Do you find, I mean, we read statistics on our end in the research that arbitration on a national level tends to favor the facilities. Is that kind of your understanding, or have you experienced that? Like, I mean, I know you said you have...
Yeah, the data is clear on that.
Yeah.
The data is clear that the awards tend to be lower than a jury verdict, and they tend to be skewed. In Minnesota, there was an arbitration company. It was a nationwide company, but our attorney general took them on, and it was one where the defendants would win 90% of the time, and in that 10% of the time, if the plaintiff won, that arbitrator would be stricken from the future panels. And they entered into a corporate integrity agreement, which put them out of business.
Wow. All right. So, Mark, I was reading a recent article about you. Well, I mean, it was about nursing home neglect and abuse, but it spent a good chunk of it talking about some of your war stories. And one of those war stories, Mark, was a case that involved the calculation of how much a can of dog food is. Can you kind of tell us about that case and tell us, you know, what dog food had to do with the story?
Well, we had a case where a woman lost 12% of her body weight in 1 month and then died.
Wow.
So we brought a lawsuit for wrongful death, you know, for dehydration and starvation. And we got into what are called cost reports, which are the financial records that the nursing home has to file with the federal government. And I took the deposition of the chief financial officer of this national chain. And I was surprised to find out that I was the first one to have ever taken his testimony. And, you know, he came in and he was all spiffed and shiny. And he went right to the cost report and said, look, we paid $91,434 in food that the year she died. And he said, you know, almost $100,000 on food. How can you criticize us? And what I did was, when we go into these financial records, we can find out how many patients were in the nursing home, you know, per day. It's called bed days. So if you have 100 beds and it's full on one day, that's 100 bed days. So you can figure out how many patients were in the facility over the course of the year. And then what we did is we divided the $91,434 by the average number, or by the number of bed days they had, to find out how much money was spent on each patient per day for that year. And what we discovered when we did the math was that they spent $3.75 per day for food. That was for breakfast, and $3.75 for breakfast and lunch, and $3.75 for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and $3.75 for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and beverages. $3.75, and we looked at that, and we compared that to the cost of Alpo, and that was 3.5 cans of Alpo that it would take to buy that. So we analogized the food that the money they spent on food to the amount of money that would be spent on dog food. And that was a powerful metaphor that brought that case to a rapid conclusion.
And that was on cross-examination? That was actually at trial, not at a mediation or at a depo?
Yeah. That was a deposition of the chief financial officer.
Gotcha. Okay.
For the national chain.
Yeah. I mean, like these guys, I mean, like it's like the guy's a snake. I can just imagine in my head what he looks like.
So they were spending basically under $4 a day per patient
per day.
Good God.
What's that?
I don't understand how they got away with that.
Well, nobody does the math.
Yeah.
There have been even cases where I've found that they spend more money per prisoner in the state penal institutions than they do on the food in the nursing home.
And these are our most vulnerable population.
Yeah.
Right. So we say they're going to be better off in prison than they are in the nursing home, because at least they'll feed them there.
Yeah.
Well, Mark, that's a good segue into the concept of oversight. And again, in this article that I mentioned a little bit earlier, talking about nursing home abuse and neglect, it quoted you as, and I'll let you explain it, but paraphrasing it, you're talking about how if the government agencies that are charged with oversight did their jobs, then neither you nor I or Will would have jobs at all. If they did the regulation correctly, the things would get taken care of. Can you kind of talk about that? What's your understanding of that?
Sure. Well, in my early years, I was a machine guarding lawyer. You know, tractors have these power takeoffs on the back, and they were wide open. They'd have these spinning tubes, kind of, you know, like a differential in a car. Mm-hmm. And people would walk by, and the wind would blow their clothing or their coat into this thing, and they'd get pulled in. It would rip off both of their arms. And I did two or three of those a year. And a guard would cost about $6 to prevent that injury. And you got to understand, some of these combines cost $300,000-$400,000. And they didn't want to spend $6 on a guard. Well, after we sued them for a number of years, they realized it's a lot cheaper to put a six dollar guard on than to fight with us. And they did it. And they put us out of business. That was great. I don't need people to get killed or get their arms ripped off.
Right.
There's plenty of bad guys to hunt. And so, you know, I'm trying to hold nursing homes accountable. And after 38 years of practice, if they would change their ways, or if the government would start enforcing the regulations and putting some teeth into the punishments they give, these nursing homes wouldn't be dangerous anymore, and I'd be out of business, and I think that would be a great way to end my career.
Yeah, we were just talking a couple episodes back, two or three episodes back, about how the CMS final rule, phase two, the current administration put a moratorium even on levying fines for the new rules have been put in place. So, like, why even have the rules if you've taken away the enforcement of it?
They're meaningless.
Yeah. Right. You know, that's just a reflection of, you know, the industry's impact on government. They lobby like crazy. And the crazy thing about it is the fines aren't that bad. I mean, I have a death case I handled in Oklahoma where this is like the worst facility I've ever seen, and they were put on immediate jeopardy, which means if they didn't change their way, they'd get their license taken away. And this was after fines of, you know, repeatedly for probably a 1 year period. And those didn't even hit $60,000. Typically, the fines I see, if they levy them, are $500 to $1,500. You know, you can pay more for parking tickets than that.
Right. I mean, that's doing nothing to cause a systematic change. I mean, like, you're right. I mean, attorneys such as yourself and us to an extent are, you know, we have the ability to provide such compensatory fines in terms of verdicts or settlements that it forces them to put the $6 guard on the machines.
Yeah, I've had companies that, you know, were serial offenders, and I sued one, you know, like three or four times in a two-year window. And I was at a mediation with the CFO, and he said, you know, Mark, you really piss me off that you're suing me all the time. Hmm. But I'll tell you, I didn't know that we were having the problems we had in our company, and I'm going to change the ways so you can't sue us anymore. And he did.
That's a compliment.
Yeah, there you go.
It was great. Yeah. Kudos to him.
So, Mark, we've talked about, you know, prosecuting a case of nursing home abuse and neglect all the way through. We talked about arbitration. We talked about basically the philosophical standpoint of you know, government oversight versus the civil justice system. Let's take it back to the family whose loved one is in a nursing home. What advice can you give that person whose grandmother, grandfather is there and is a resident in a nursing home in order to be on guard against potential things that could happen to them? Do you have any advice?
Sure do. First of all, pick your nursing home carefully. The government data isn't 100%, but it'll at least show you which ones have the most complaints. And just because the government didn't find neglect, if there are hundreds of complaints, that tells you something. Then, when they get to the nursing home, visit them. Visit them a lot. Mm-hmm. Because then there's someone watching over what's going on. Do your best to stay in a positive relationship with the staff. You know, don't make it so they hate you, and in turn just try to stay away from your family member. But make sure that when you have a positive relationship, you also are asking them what's going on, and get authority to look at the medical records and just say, I want to see how these things are going. And if there are complaints, be vigilant, because complaints are usually the tip of the iceberg. And if it's a bad home, then try to find another place.
Yeah. Let's put ourselves in the shoes of somebody who has a loved one that's already residing in a nursing home and they suspect something. Do you suggest nanny cams? Do you suggest, other than visiting often, what else could a person do that's concerned?
I'm a huge fan of nanny cams. You got to make sure they're legal in your state.
Right.
But mini cams are great because they uncover things that people don't know. So mini cams are always a good idea.
Have you had an opportunity to use footage from a nanny cam yet? I mean, I feel like that's not necessarily new technology, but now it's really ubiquitous. So
I did. One that stands out is there was a situation where, in an assisted living, where the resident was complaining that things are being stolen from her. And interestingly enough, the facility said, we're going to put a minicam in to prove to you that this isn't happening. And in about 3 or 4 months, The video caught an aide just angrily throwing this resident across the floor, just dragging him by their arm on the floor, and just frustrated and abusing this resident. We've had another one where we had mini cams that the facility didn't know, where the resident or the aides were taunting the resident, pulling her dress up and making comments about her privates and calling her the resident a whore and a bitch. And we had that all on minicam.
Good God.
So,
man.
We've also had cases where the minicam hasn't caught the event, but they've caught there have been hall mini cams where we could time who went into the room and when to prove what happened. And a kind of a collateral case, not this isn't a nursing home case, it's a hospital case, but I have an emergency room case where the mini cam tracked what was going on in the hospital room, and the medical records did not reflect a lot of what was going on there.
Yeah.
So these are pretty bad.
Pretty powerful tools for, you know, showing actually what happened. So
it's powerful stuff.
Yeah. Well, Mark, we certainly appreciate your time. We know that your time is valuable. You got lots of things to do. But we, as you know, fellow nursing home abuse attorneys, really appreciate your time and talking to us about all things nursing home litigation related.
Your experience with these places. Absolutely.
Yeah. I think that you're great. I actually have your book. We mentioned your book, but I have your 30B6 deposition book. I've already been putting it into use.
Well, it's going into its second printing already.
It needs to. Fantastic. Well, great. Well, Mark, again, thank you so much for being on the show, sir.
My privilege. Thank you for having me.
Man, I'm really glad. I mean, like, just recognize this, that you and I send out invitations for people to be on this show.
Yeah.
Okay. Some of them go unresponded to. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, people, like, ignore it or whatever. I emailed Mark, who is, from the beginning of the show, he's one of the best lawyers in America, rated top 100 trial lawyers and he responded in minutes and said, I would be honored to be on your show.
Yeah. That's, like, you know, that level of humility is what you get when you've been practicing for 38 years.
Yeah, like, I mean, there's a misconception in the legal world, in the public at large, that, like, you know, the best lawyers are snakes, they're aggressive or whatever.
That's not true.
The best lawyers, the lawyers that I fear, the lawyers that are like Mark, treat people like gold.
Yeah.
They're genuinely nice people, but they could still also destroy you if they want to.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, if you're a nursing home, you're going to get destroyed.
Yeah. Mark is the best dude. Fantastic, and we're really glad that he came on the show. But that's actually going to conclude this episode. As always, you can watch each and every episode. They come out every Monday morning. You can see us on the YouTubes, or you can check us out on the website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. And where can we download the audio to these podcasts?
iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify. I don't know.
I'm sure they're out there. I just don't know what they are.
Yeah, platform. Everybody has Spotify. We're not on Pandora.
Yet. But anyway, yeah. Maybe one day. But at any rate, we appreciate your you checking us out this week, and we will see you next time.
See you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Please be sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, and feel free to leave us some feedback. And for more information about the topics discussed in this episode, check out the show website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. That's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.